14 days of thought-provoking topics. Listen online at 1037thebeat. 14 days of thought-provoking topics. Listen online at 1037thebeat.com. The People Station is 103.7 The Beat.
14 days, day number 11. You know, and I know it's one of these subjects, Big Rob, is probably, you know, to some folks, they might can't handle it. If your faith is not strong, then you might not be able to handle this one. You know, and so that maybe I should have gave a disclaimer at the beginning of the show. If you're struggling with faith, you know, I'm a person who loves knowledge.
Right.
I love to read. And I can handle a whole bunch of different views. We don't have atheists on radio. We don't have people we don't have a national social movement on radio.
Yep.
So I can love different views.
Right.
But this is I think it's even deeper than that, because this deals to our core beliefs. We finding out today how did the Bible come about? At least I think it's a legitimate conversation, because in Sunday school, and I went to Sunday school every Sunday, I went to YPWW every Sunday, Friday night service, revival, it was never discussed. You know, so I wanted to know.
I don't know if any church has really discussed the Bible.
And you, as if, how do we get to that point? How it was never discussed. No. And I've been to thousands of services, man.
Right.
For real. On the phone line, Dr. Weston Muhammad's on the phone line. I want to go back to where we're getting ready to get into Dr. Weston Muhammad, the Council of Nicaea. Is I'm saying the word right?
Yes, sir. Nicaea.
The Council of Nicaea. Now, they are the one who authorized the Bible. Is that right? Or what was their position? What was their authority?
Well, no, it wasn't. Yes and no. But basically, no. The authorization regarding the Bible came after the council itself convened and dispersed. The Council of Nicaea dealt with another issue. But in popular imagination, the Bible was one of the issues it dealt with, but it did not. However, the convener of the Council of Nicaea was convened in 325 AD by the recently victorious Roman Emperor Constantine. He had just consolidated the empire, defeating his rivals. And he did it after seeing a vision in which there was a cross. And on that cross was the words, "Hoc signo victor erit," by this sign you shall conquer. And he thought that this was a sign from the God of the persecuted Christians. The Christians were persecuted in his kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
He thought this was a sign because this sign came to him by way of the cross was in the hands. He didn't know what it was. The cross was not the symbol of Christianity at the time, but it will be as a consequence of this.
Mm-hmm.
He thought the cross came to him, the sign came to him by way of Christ, the God of the persecuted Christians. And because he was victorious with this sign, he forced his soldiers to bear the cross, and he was victorious. And so after consolidating the kingdom, he converted to Christianity. There was a big controversy that was threatening to destabilize this recently united kingdom. And the controversy involved Christians disputing a theological issue. The heartbeat of that dispute was actually in Egypt. A brother by the name of Arius, an African, insisted that there is a distinction between God the Father and God the Son. The God the Son was, by virtue of being Son, was subordinate to the Father, was posterior to, meaning the Father was first, the Son was second. Others rejected that. In particular, Athanasius and the boys argued that God the Father and God the Son were one being, were the same. So this caused a big fight, big theological squabble that threatened the unity of the recently unified empire of King Constantine. So he intervened, and that intervention came in the form of a council that was called in Nicaea, which is right outside what is now Turkey. Hmm. And this was in 325, and 2,000 clergy, around 300 bishops came, and King Constantine presided over it, and the Orthodox position on the nature of Christ, the Orthodox Christian position on the nature of Christ was determined at that council, called the Nicene Creed, that Christ and his father were homoousios, of the same substance, not homoousios, with that iota, which means of similar substance. The Council of Nicaea decreed that God the Father and God the Son were the same. Banished Arius, the African, and those who understood as he understood. So this was what the Council of Nicaea was convened to handle, the theological question of the nature of Christ and his relationship to God the Father. And that council determined Christian orthodoxy on the matter from that point on. The issue of scripture of the Bible didn't come up at the council. It did come up shortly after the council, and the same actors, Constantine and Eusebius. Eusebius presided, was the bishop that presided at the council alongside Constantine, the emperor. Eusebius, prior to the council, had just published a work, famous in Christian circles, the Ecclesiastical History, in which he outlined the disputes that took place in the kingdom, in the Christian communities, sorry, not necessarily the kingdom, but in the various Christian communities, the disputes that took place regarding scriptures. And he noted the various communities who had different configurations of scripture, different gospels. And Eusebius, in that book, suggested what the right New Testament or Bible should look like. After the Council of Nicaea, Constantine ordered Eusebius, after ordering that all heretical books be destroyed, Constantine ordered Eusebius to print 50 new Bibles. And so the Bibles that were produced were the Bibles that Eusebius had configured in his Ecclesiastical History, which is the Bible that we have today. So the actors of the Council of Nicaea were the ones responsible for the configuration of the Bible, though it did not happen at the Council of Nicaea itself.
Hmm. Did the image of Jesus Christ change after the Council of Nicaea? Had the Bible restructured? Had the Bible structured the way it is?
You said had the Bible.
Did the image of Christ change after this?
Well, the image was changing before and continued to change. You talking about the physical image?
The physical image, yes. Correct. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. The physical image of Christ was changed, not necessarily at the Council of Nicaea, but with a 4th century letter that purported to represent a rendition of Josephus. Josephus was a 1st century Jew who wrote the only contemporary witness of Jesus and the early Jesus movement. And Josephus is 1st century Jew, according to the reconstructed text by Robert Eisler, described Jesus as black-skinned with a nasty beard, short and ugly of appearance. This is how the only extant witness, contemporary witness of Jesus, describes him. Now, this text of Josephus went through Christian hands. All of the transmissions of this text went through Christian hands. Jews were not interested in Josephus' history for whatever reason, so they did not transmit his historical works. Christians did, and Christians altered it. And so where Josephus had Jesus described as short, black, with curly hair and a nappy beard, later renditions of his description has Jesus tall, flowing hair with a ruddy white complexion. So, absolutely, just as the scriptures were crucified, if you will, at the hands of Christians, imperial Christians, the image of Christ himself was crucified at the hands of imperial Christians.
So the image we see today is not accurate.
Oh, absolutely it's not accurate. And I direct you and your audience to 2001 edition, summer edition of Popular Mechanics. It has an important, the cover story is the real face of Jesus. Forensic science reveals the true image of Jesus. Israeli and British, what they call forensic archaeologists, working with all of the available evidence regarding first century Israel, Judea, and its population, reconstructed the likely image of what Jesus would have looked like, what a first century Jew meeting the conditions of a Jesus according to the gospel, what he would have looked like. And Popular Mechanics published this image, and it's a black, curly-haired man. And so science has confirmed today what Josephus had testified to 2,000 years ago, that Jesus was a black-skinned man because the Israelites were black-skinned people.
Wow. I want to ask you about some of the people who translated the Old Testament. Was Shakespeare involved in the Bible translation?
Well, there's claims, and they're probably true, of Shakespeare's involvement in the King James translation. Oh, now, the King James translation of the Bible has its own issues independent of the involvement of William Shakespeare. So William Shakespeare may have been in some way involved with the 52-member, 16 of translators that King James employed to translate his Bible. I have not come across any evidence other than Tony Browder's information regarding William Shakespeare and how in Psalms 46 his name may have been encoded. Well, I don't know. As an historian of religion and religious texts, I can't confirm or deny that. What I can confirm and deny, the King James Translation Project was a project of deception. Not only, irrespective of the fact that he was a homosexual and publicly justified his homosexuality on the basis of Jesus's relationship to John. That's a King James.
Mm-hmm.
No. Justified having sex with another man on the basis of his interpretation of Jesus's relationship to the Apostle John.
And this is public. And this is noted.
Oh, I direct you to a most important book on the subject. I can actually quote King James himself, but for sake of time, I direct you to Michael Young's book, King James and the History of Homosexuality, published by New York University Press. It is absolutely noted.
Yeah.
It is a matter of official public record.
Dr. Westman, why do you think it's so hard for us to talk about the Bible? Why is it such a controversial subject?
Because the dogma of the infallibility of the Bible, the dogma of the infallibility of the Quran, because Muslims have the exact same experiences with regard to critical discussions of the Quran. We believe that our faith, everything we believe as a Christian, or everything we believe as a Muslim, hinges on this belief that the Bible we have or the Quran we have dropped down from heaven, pure, and that every word in it is in the exact same place it was today, it is today as it was when it first dropped down from heaven. So the historical critical studies that suggested no, both the Bible and the Quran have a very mundane, a very earthly history, have a history impacted by time, space, and people. We assume that means by acknowledging those facts, we have to give up our fundamental beliefs that are based on the erroneous belief that these books fell down from heaven and traveled on earth completely unaltered. It is not the case. The Quran, and in this case, the Bible, has been altered on several occasions. We can give names of those who authorized the alterations of the book. We can give examples of alterations in the Bible. So the Bible has been altered. The Bible, in a sense, has been crucified as Christ himself was crucified.
Go ahead, Big Rob.
The Roman Catholic Church and can you speak on that? I guess the Pope and all of that. How did that come about?
Well, it was King Constantine. That was the Christianity empowered by King Constantine and became the imperial cult. The Catholic Church was the church that became the instrument of imperial rule. And Christianity was fundamentally changed when Catholicism or the Catholic Church became an arm to the imperial state. The clergy now were paid by the state, and Christianity went from being a persecuted group, producing martyrs that were willing to suffer for the message of Christ, turned around and with the sanction and the power invested in them by Constantine's state, now became the imperial persecutors. They began torturing. They began doing unto non-Catholic Christians what was done unto them prior to Constantine ascending the throne. So Catholicism is the one of, unfortunately, it is what it is from an historical perspective. The Catholic Church, who blessed the slave ships, the Pope blessed the slave ships as they left the harbor and was responsible for that slave ship named Jesus to carry cargoes of Africans during the Middle Passage. The Catholic Church has a lot, and the Pope in particular, has a lot of blood on his hands. It is responsible for some great deceptions. The Pope wears on his garment an image of, or one of his garments, an image of the white, fabricated white Christ, but will return and pray
to a black Madonna.
Before a black Madonna with a black Christ in her hand. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, there is great deception on a world level emanating from the Catholic Church because it has become an imperial house. Catholicism was transformed from a persecuted religious sect to the persecuting imperial house.
Tell me, Dr. Wesley Muhammad, why do you think there are about 50 different translations? And tell me, also we want to talk about the Quran before we go here.
Well, because everybody wants to read the Bible the way they want to read the Bible. And so everyone has their own translation of the Bible. Translation is interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
Translation is interpretation. And so in as much as we all want the scriptures to say what we want them to say, we are inclined to produce a translation of the scriptures. What? Most of them are dogmatic and not scholarly.
What if somebody out there is struggling with their faith, they're an unbeliever, what would you say to them? what would you direct them to?
Well, if they're struggling with their faith because of this discussion.
Discussion, even prior to this discussion.
Again, the fact I am, let me say, I'm a Muslim. But I'm not on your show, Brother Paul, as a Muslim. I'm on your show as an historian of religion.
Right.
That means I'm trained in the historical critical study of religion and religious texts.
One
we can
best.
Have the same discussion about the Quran, the fact of the matter is, and I approach the Quran the same way I approach the Bible.
Right.
And so what I would say to anyone struggling with faith because of disinformation, if your faith was based on the mistaken belief that your scripture, either the Bible or the Quran, fell from heaven and remained as is all this time as it journeyed through time, space, and encountered people, well, your faith doesn't need to be abandoned, but it needs to be tweaked.
Okay.
Information, I believe that facts must inform faith.
Right. Let's talk about the Quran before we go. How does the Quran relate to the Bible? Is there a relation there?
Well, the Quran explicitly puts itself within the biblical revelatory system, the biblical revelatory paradigm. That is to say, according to the Quran, the Bible, both the Torah or the so-called Old Testament and the Injil or the Gospel, emanated from the same God that the Quran emanated from. So the Quran or God in the Quran takes equal credit for revealing the Old and the New Testament. Now, the Quran says that the reason it was revealed or needed to be revealed was because the two prior receiving communities, Jews and Christians, corrupted, tampered with their scriptures. And that is a historical fact. Jewish scribes altered, tampered with the Hebrew Bible. Christian scribes altered the New Testament.
Wow. Dr. Wesley Muhammad's on the phone line. We're talking about the Bible, different versions of the Bible. Is the Bible perfect? I asked this to Pastor Willie Wilson. Is it perfect? Is it some mistakes there?
Oh, absolutely there is. Well, are you asking about theological mistakes or literary mistakes?
Well,
there are certainly literary mistakes. There are certainly alterations. If the Bible started out as perfect, then you can't say the Bible that we have is perfect because the Bible we have is different from the Bible as it looked a long time ago. So if the original Bible was perfect, there's no way we can claim this current Bible is perfect because it has been changed. It has been altered.
It has been altered.
Is there anywhere that we can, that the scribes are kept or whatever, that if we knew ancient Hebrew or Latin or something of that nature, or Greek, ancient Greek, that we could go and read those scribes for ourselves without the translation?
Well, absolutely, the Bible, the only relevant Bible is the Hebrew Bible in the Greek. The English New Testament, the English King James is not really relevant to a discussion of the Bible. The King James book is just that, King James's book. We have to talk about the Hebrew Bible, and we have to approach it in its Hebrew. We have to just talk about the Greek New Testament. We have to approach it in its Greek. Now, if you know Hebrew and Greek, you can access the manuscript traditions of these books. Now, you won't get the original Bible because we don't have that. The earliest we have are the Dead Sea Scroll texts, which date from between the 1st century B.C., and the 1st century A.D. Those are the oldest that we have, and we just recently had them. Prior to that, the oldest we had was the 10th century so-called Masoretic text, which is the basis of all of these translations that you speak about. But now we know that the Masoretic text was altered. Jewish scribes changed it because the Dead Sea Scrolls attest to that fact. Because there are differences between the so-called Masoretic text, the text undergirding all of the current translations of the Hebrew Bible. There are differences between that and the Dead Sea Scrolls text, which predate it by 1,000 years.
Wow. Dr. Wesley Muhammad's on the phone line. Does the Bible take place I'd say it like this. What geographical area does the Bible take place in?
The production of the Bible or the stories within the Bible?
The stories within the Bible.
Well, actually, the easy answer, and for most to whom you ask that question, the answer would be an easy answer. It takes place in Israel. Some of it in Egypt, most of it in Israel. So the Bible, the Hebrew Bible, is taken to be the history of the Israelites in that land now called Israel, Palestine. However, a new book, Kamal Celebi, The Bible Came from Arabia, argues that that is errant, that in fact the location of the biblical dramas, if you will, is Western Arabia, that placing the stories in the Bible north in the, what's called the Levant, in that area of Israel-Palestine, is based on a misreading of biblical land names. And he argues, and quite convincingly, that most of what takes place in the Bible actually takes place in Western Arabia. That means the early Israelites were Arabians, Western Arabians, who later entered the Levantine area, the area of Palestine, Israel. But they originated in Western Arabia, and most of the stories regarding them in the Bible take place in Western Arabia.
All right, Dr. Wesley Muhammad, man, an hour went real quick, man.
Yes, it did.
I tell you what, my internet server for streaming online is blowing up. I don't know. I did a blog earlier today on Facebook that you were going to be on and some of my other guests going to be on, but it's peaking out at the highest that we have had since we've done this 14 days.
Wonderful.
And obviously 4 hours not going to be enough because we got a couple more guests coming up, and you know, we're going to hear different conversations. We're going to talk about African theology coming up next, but I'm happy that you gave us an hour of your time. How can people find out more about you?
They can visit me at theblackgod.com. Also, my Facebook page, Wesley Muhammad, W-E-S-L-E-Y, Muhammad, M-U-H-A-M-M-A-D, and at drwesleymuhammad.com.
All right. Thank you so much, man. I know you're good friends of Franklin Fadal. I want to send a shout out to him for...
Yes, sir. We will be in. Brother Franklin is bringing me to Muskegon. We're doing an event in the near future.
Right.
At his gym. So I'd like to invite your listening audience to be on the lookout for that. I'm looking forward to coming to Muskegon.
That's going
to
be amazing, man. It's been an exciting time. He got something really great going over there with the kids. He's doing a great thing at the boxing club. All right, brother. Thanks.
All right.
Take care.
Thank you.
All right.